Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's me, Ji Suk Yee. You can just call me G, of course. Thanks for joining the show on this very foggy Friday. Looking outside of the WGN Radio Studios windows, I can only see a couple of feet in front of me, but otherwise it just looks like a lot of heavy fog out there. We've got a ton of great folks on the show today, so let's go ahead and get started. FICO, you know about FICO, the credit score company. It updated its credit score service. So here's what you need to know. Joining us is Greg McBride. He is the chief financial analyst for Bankrate.com. Hi, Greg. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, G. Happy Friday.
Same to you. We did. We made it to the end of the week. Okay, so I'm a little bit nervous about this FICO. What is this update and how is it going to affect my score?
Well, the credit scoring models do update from time to time, and I think at its most basic level, we have to remember that the reason credit scores were devised and what they exist to do is to provide lenders an assessment of risk. And so as conditions change, they can adjust the model. What they've done with this latest model is add in one feature that I think has been long overdue. It's called trending. In other words, it's going to look at your pattern of debt. Have you been piling on debt month after month for the last 2 years? Well, that's going to knock your score down. Oh, do you only have big balances right around the holidays and then they get paid off early January? Well, then in that case, it's going to factor that in. That'll help your score. You're not going to get dinged as if you're carrying that debt throughout the whole year. So I think some things that will help those with good credit, show even better. Those that do have some indicators of risk, I think their credit score is going to more likely reflect that.
Talking with Chief Financial Analyst Greg McBride of Bankrate.com. So, Greg, are you saying that if you necessarily don't have the best credit, is this going to hurt you more?
It depends on why you don't have the best credit. Let's keep in mind the single most important factor in your credit score is making your payments on time. So recent delinquencies, if you're late on bills right now, that's going to hurt your score a lot more than if the last time you had a late payment was this time last year. So first rule is make all of your payments on time. Second thing is it's going to look at your debt load, and the second biggest factor is your credit utilization. In other words, how much of that line of credit are you using? Well, those that have shown a tendency to increase the amount of debt that they have, that utilization ratio is going up over time, their scores may decline to reflect that higher risk relative to somebody who is maybe moving in the other direction. You know, their utilization ratio has gone down over the last couple of years because they've been paying down their debt. They would be rewarded with that through a higher score.
Do the latest versions of this FICO score, and I'm thinking it's 10 and 10T, I'm assuming, does the T stand for trending, or what does it stand
for? Yes.
Okay, got it. When is it going to roll out, and does it account for all types of debt in the same way? For example, medical debt or a personal loan versus a mortgage?
Different debts are looked at differently. So one of the things that's evolved in this latest model is personal loans are going to be looked at. They've shown tremendous growth, but they're going to be evaluated relative to your other debts that you had. So, for example, let's say you consolidated a bunch of credit card debt with a personal loan, but then you went out and ran up all that credit card debt all over again. Well, you're really going to get dinged for that because you're posing a higher risk to anybody that would be lending you money down the road. Behavior is very important in the sense that you want to demonstrate that, A, you can pay your bills on time, and that, B, you're using credit responsibly, you're paying down obligations, and that you're only borrowing money whenever you need to borrow it.
And, Greg, it's going to take a little bit of time for this to roll out.
It will, yes, and maybe more than a little bit of time. Sometimes the adoption of these new credit scoring models can move at a snail's pace. The last update, FICO 9, was back in 2014, and there are lenders that aren't even using that yet. So this is not something that's going to change overnight, and even when you do start to see it pop up at different lenders, it may pop up with one lender, but another lender might be using an older version of it. So I think the most important thing is just be familiar with what are the important factors in maintaining a good credit score so that you can show your best self regardless of which model the lender's using.
Well, thanks so much, Greg McBride, Bankrate.com's chief financial analyst. We look forward to having you back on. I do want to talk about this new growth in the industry of personal loans, so we got to have you back on soon. Thanks so much, Greg.
I look forward to it. Thanks, G.
Yep. Coming up, we've got two Loyola grad students who developed an app that will tell you when the elevators are out on your favorite CTA platform. So that is coming up on WGN Radio. G here with the Wintrust Business Lunch. So excited to have Sam Siner and Tyler Arndt in studio today. They are the designers. They're also Loyola University of Chicago graduate students who designed an app that will tell you when an elevator is out on CTA platforms. So thanks so much for being with us today, Sam and Tyler. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Great.
Okay, so tell me about this app. How did this idea first come about?
So basically Sam and I were looking at different options of things we could do for a summer class we were taking, and we decided that we wanted to do an app, and that had to basically fit a couple different criteria that we wanted. One being that something we could actually accomplish within the given time frame, but also something that could be solving a real problem and something that would be giving back to the community. So after kicking around a couple different ideas, we came across this plan for these elevator outages that we have and how big of a problem that seems to be for ADA patrons, and how we could fix the communication gap of letting people know when their elevators are down, when they're back up, so that they're no longer stranded at these different stations.
So, Tyler, you are a computer science graduate student.
Yes.
And then, Sam, you are in software engineering.
Correct.
And the two of you met in this software engineering program?
Yeah, we did. We're both students who've been working full time for a while and are going back to school, and we took prerequisite classes at Loyola a little over a year ago and met there, and then we've continued working together and being students together since.
So you described yourselves as career changers. So what drew you to getting a graduate degree in this line of work?
So my background is in architecture originally, and I had taken a programming class in my undergrad before, and I was always in the back of my mind something I really enjoyed. So when I was doing architecture, I thought, you know, this is a pretty valuable skill to have at doing programming. So I turned my architecture portfolio into a website, just teaching myself some of those front-end languages. And the more that I taught myself, the more I learned, the more I really enjoyed it. And I realized that if I wanted to take this to the next level a little more seriously, I would have to go back to school to do that.
Sam, what were you doing in your past career life?
I work in higher education.
Okay, so the big change for you.
Yeah.
So had you ever designed an app before?
No, neither of us had before.
And what's the assignment during the software engineering program class? Did it tell you you had to design an app, or is that you decided this was going to be the vehicle you used?
Yeah, this was actually just an independent study project. We decided that we wanted to learn a new skill and in the process try to, you know, help the community. It was it was completely independent, and that taught us actually a lot about you know, how to learn new skills on our own with guidance from the Loyola Computer Science Department, but how to learn new skills on our own and how to actually talk with the community so that this was meeting a real need and not just a class project.
You two don't look like the kind of guys that would be waiting for an elevator. So how did this even come to your mind as a problem and an issue?
Yeah. So we figured pretty early on that we wanted to tackle something that related to civic technology. And we knew that public transportation was something that interested us. And so when we thought of this idea of elevator alerts, we actually went to the Rogers Park community specifically and asked questions and even posted in Facebook groups and got real feedback from people and discovered pretty quickly that this was a problem that affected a variety of different populations.
And not necessarily just the folks that come to mind that you would think might need an elevator,
right,
but
right.
A lot of people need elevators, and it was kind of a surprising for you guys to find out who needed elevators.
Absolutely. You know, we realized pretty early on that this was a challenge for people with mobility limitations or people with disabilities. But we also discovered that this would be helpful for parents with strollers or the elderly or, you know, people with luggage coming back from the airport. And these were things that came up when we were talking with people out in the community that we hadn't even thought of.
I have always noticed when there is a parent with a stroller trying to get the stroller either down the stairs or up the stairs, it's, you got to help, okay? If you see somebody going through that, please help. But of course, they need the app. So how often are the elevators not working on CTA platforms? Or I guess I should ask first, Tyler, how many elevators are, does every CTA platform have elevators?
So they do not. And that was kind of one of the first things that we noticed. We came across this CTA report, I believe it was called ASAP, which was All Stations Accessibility Program. And it said it was basically the plan for the CTA to, over a couple different decades, to transform all of the platforms to have elevators. But currently, only about 70% do have them.
Got
and
it.
30% don't, which equates to, I think, between 40 and 50 stations that are not accessible to people.
So, Sam, how does this app work?
Yeah, so we pulled data directly from the CTA, so it's as accurate as the CTA's data is.
and the CTA is helping you guys.
Not personally, but the CTA,
right.
The CTA, yeah, they provide this data for public use in this kind of way.
And they're not bothered that you're reporting how many times the elevators are not working.
I mean, you know, I don't know what's going on inside the CTA, but we have contacted people in the CTA and who work in technology and who work with ADA type of issues, and they've been supportive.
And you said the ADA director has been very helpful too.
Yes.
Okay. So, all right. So they provide the data. Continue.
So they provide the data, and we pulled directly from them. And actually, while we were testing the app, we went around to specific stations to go physically test whether these elevators were working and saw some accuracy to that. So that was encouraging. And then users who use the app can save favorite stations. So if you have your home station, your workstation, you can save those as favorites. You can get push notifications right on your phone if the elevators go down at those stations or when they come back up. Or you can just look at the status of any elevator on the CTA, whether the elevator exists and whether it's down or not.
Tyler, were you surprised at how many elevators aren't working at any given time?
I was surprised to see that at any given time there was at least one elevator down. Always across the system. So, yeah.
And as a CTA rider who needs an elevator, you can imagine how frustrating that would be because you're making the effort to get to your station that you think you're going to be able to get upstairs via an elevator to get on the train. And if it's not working,
right,
you're out of luck if you really need an elevator.
Yeah. So, especially like days like today that are kind of miserable outside, people that have to travel a few different blocks to get to their favorite station. What we found was people that were telling us, you know, certain delays of trains are annoying, but not that big of a deal. But people were letting us know that when they traveled to get to a station, it was heartbreaking to find that the elevator was down. And not only that, but imagine coming back, say, from work to go home, and you get to your platform and you can't get down now. So that was also an issue.
Tyler Arndt and Sam Siner, both Loyola grad students. Where can we get the app?
Yeah, the app is currently available for Android. You can download it on the Google Play Store. It's called Elevate Chicago.
And when is it going to roll out on Apple?
We're actually starting to work on that now, so sometime in the future.
And Tyler, what's the feedback you've been getting?
So far, I've been really positive. People have saying it's been helping them navigate the system as we had planned. I don't think there's been many crashes yet that we have noted on Google Play Store. So all lights are green.
And the really cool thing is the push notifications. I love that you did
yes.
that because then that way you don't have to open the app and log into the app. Has that?
That's exactly the goal of it. As we were doing user research, as we were going through it, we found pretty quickly that people have tons of apps on their phones, right? We know that too. We have tons of apps. We don't want to check them all the time. And so it's nice to not have to open them.
So Elevate Chicago is the name of the app designed by Sam Siner and Tyler Arndt. They are graduate students at Loyola University Chicago. Congratulations, guys. Come back and check in with us when it rolls out on Apple. It's not on Apple yet, but you can get it on for Android.
Yes.
So fantastic job. Thank you for doing your civic duty. We really appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Jee.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Absolutely. A lot more coming up on WGN Radio. Thank you so much for staying with WGN Radio. This is Wintrust Business Lunch with me, Jee. Joining us now is Pascal Sabino. He is a reporter for the Block Club Chicago, which is a fantastic organization that does hyper-local news. Hi, Pascal. How are you?
I'm very good. It's Friday. It's automatically my favorite day of the week.
Mine too. And I think everyone else as well. So fascinated by this article that you wrote recently. It's about how 29 small businesses on the west side of Chicago, they ended up getting big grants to grow and help shrink the death gap. There's a lot to unpack here. So let's first just start with what the death gap is.
So the death gap, kind of a scary term, right?
Yes.
It's basically just the pretty stark inequity between lifespans between folks on or folks downtown and folks in some of the most affluent neighborhoods, and folks in black and brown neighborhoods that tend to run in the kind of low income category. So between the west side, specifically West Garfield Park, and downtown the Loop, Streeterville, that gap is about 16 years. And so it's just really striking that the most the quickest way to determine how long somebody is going to live is going to be their zip code.
So if you're living in a disenfranchised neighborhood or a neighborhood that has less resources, you're saying that you could live an average of 16 fewer years than folks that maybe live in a very affluent neighborhood.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so let's talk now about Westside United. So you said this is the public health collaborative that is granting these grants.
So Westside United is a collaborative between a bunch of the different health organizations on the west side. So that's Rush University, Medical Center, Lurie Children's Hospital. So just a bunch of these health organizations that are trying to look collaboratively to kind of bridge the silos between these organizations to think about the ways in which, you know, health is not just healthcare. Health is also things like having a healthy community, having economic opportunity, having opportunities for people to have jobs that will provide them with health insurance, the capacity for people to eat healthy, the capacity for people to pay for quality childcare. All of these things kind of come together to make a community stronger and healthier that will also in turn increase the physical and mental health of individuals in that community. And a lot of those kind of buckets of areas that Westside United are trying to target, those things are really tied to longstanding, disinvestment and inequity, things that we can trace back to decades and decades, or, you know, an entire history of redlining in Chicago and just disinvestment in black and brown neighborhoods.
Talking with Block Club Chicago's Pascal Sabino. Pascal, just describe what redlining is in case someone listening might not know.
Oh, yeah. So redlining, I could talk all day about it, but redlining was a set of policies between kind of city policies, but also more localized, like homeowners, real estate developers had agreements that just literally drew red lines around certain neighborhoods in Chicago that said, okay, black people can live here, black people cannot live here. And that ended up overlapping with a lot of public housing policy. And then if you look at kind of where a lot of the school closures are today across the city, or where a lot of the school closures across the past few years have happened in the city, a lot of those schools are now just getting shut down in areas that were redlined and targeted for only black folks to live in.
So 29 grants, how much are these grants? And then how are the small businesses that are going to be offered these grants going to help shrink this death gap?
So the grants, the maximum was $29,000 for a small business, whereas startups were eligible to receive about $13,000. And the way that this is going to kind of help reduce that kind of lifespan disparity would be towards just promoting overall economic well-being in a neighborhood. We know that neighborhoods where there are jobs, where people are able to walk around and, you know, have physical activity outside, or go and eat a healthy meal at a local restaurant. The neighborhoods that have those kinds of amenities, people just generally are going to be a little bit healthier. And so these small business grants are really targeted at at businesses that can kind of have that catalytic change in the neighborhood and also spark something of a domino effect where having one successful business in a main commercial corridor can also bring other businesses to kind of create widespread change in a neighborhood. And a lot of these grants are given to businesses that provide some basic amenities to a neighborhood, things like restaurants, catering services, all kinds of things. And the grants are really aimed at helping the businesses first and foremost to stay in business, but also to be able to hire locally, because every business that is in a neighborhood is a set of jobs for people that can help to lift them or uplift their economic situations as well. And so a lot of what I saw from the grants was you know, one organization or one company, Coleman's Barbecue, they wanted to use the grant to literally replace their barbecue and buy a walk-in refrigerator. Another one of the companies that won the grant, Amazing Edibles, I think they had such a cool project. They were using the grant to start an internship program that would also, again, be kind of an economic engine for people in the neighborhood to get their foot in the door, learn about entrepreneurship, and get some of those business skills from a young age.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We've been talking to reporter Pascal Sabino for Block Club Chicago. And it was a really startling statistic, but then it's a fantastic story that you wrote. So thank you so much for being with us. Winters to Business Lunch, G here. Chicago Restaurant Week started today. I think it started today at lunch. So it's the 13th annual Chicago Restaurant Week. Can you believe it? Joining us to talk a little bit about the business side of things for Chicago Restaurant Week is Sam Toya. He is the president of the Illinois Restaurant Association. Hi, Sam. How are you?
Hi, G. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, fantastic to have you here with us. So let's talk. Congratulations. This is the 13th annual. And why is this so important for business?
Well, okay. So historically, January is one of the slower months mm-hmm. in the restaurant industry, you know, nationwide, because you're coming off the holidays and stuff. So, like you said, this is our 13th annual event sponsored by Choose Chicago for a dining around. And it's important because it definitely puts customers in the restaurant. It puts people in chairs in restaurants, which is very important because we like to show off our culinary scene here in the culinary capital of the United States, and this is where locals can visit some of the greatest restaurants here.
And these are specially curated menus, right? And how much does it cost?
Yes, they are. So it's for 17 consecutive days, and participating restaurants showcase special curated on their menus with prices set at $24 for brunch and lunch and $36 to $48 for dinner. But it is a fixed menu, like you said.
And you have to make sure that you have to pay extra for beverages that you're ordering, then, of course, tax, and then you should always tip well, right, Sam?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's right. That's right. But like I said, this is a lot cheaper than sometimes when you go into some of these great great restaurants here in Chicago. So it's a nice bargain, especially for the next 17 days.
It's a great opportunity to check out a restaurant without a ton of risk, and it's also a great opportunity to check out restaurants that maybe are outside of your budget and you wouldn't normally visit the restaurant.
That's exactly right, G, and that's what, you know, what we try to, you know, try to do at Choose Chicago, to get people throughout our, you know, throughout Chicagoland to come into some of our great restaurants and try them, because, you know, like you said, it's a fixed price, it's affordable, and sometimes they, you know, some folks just wouldn't go if they were going if it was just a regular menu. So it's definitely a way to get some customers into some of our great restaurants.
Sam, hearing that this year is sort of record-breaking because you're having a lot more restaurants participate.
Yes, this is the biggest. This is the biggest ever. There's, you know, there's over 80 new restaurants participating in 2020. And you know, you can go on, you can go on, online at eatitupchicago.com.
So I'm guessing these restaurants are attracted and signing up for Chicago Restaurant Week because it brings in big revenue. Do you have an idea of what historically, in terms of revenue, that it's brought in?
Well, yeah, you know, I don't have the exact number, G, but what it does, again, as I told you, traditionally, it's a slow time of year for restaurants. So when you do restaurant weeks, it helps the restaurant have a, you know, a decent month instead of having one of their worst months.
A lot of people don't realize when they're sitting in a really nice restaurant that restaurants really operate on a very small profit margin.
That's true, G. 95 cents that's taken in at 95 cents on every dollar that's taken in the restaurant goes out for product cost, payroll, fixed costs. So most restaurants work on a 3-5% profit margin. It is a very, very tight profit margin industry.
And restaurants provide a lot of jobs in the Chicago region.
Absolutely. You know that the restaurant food service industry here in the state of Illinois is the largest private sector employee with over 588,000 people working in it. And there's over 26,000 restaurants throughout Illinois, and we do over $30 billion in sales.
What do you think some of the biggest issues facing the industry are for this coming year?
Well, you know, it's always, obviously it's always payroll. Payroll is a big part of the restaurant industry. It's all about product cost and payroll. So, you know, you got to, you know, payroll is always a problem. But you know what's the biggest problem right now is labor shortage. You know, that's why we've always been for immigration reform. You know, the hospitality industry here in the city of Chicago, the immigrants have always been the backbone of, you know, of that, from the Eastern Europeans to the Greeks to the Italians to the Asians to the Africans to the Latinos to the Mexicans. That's why we're so, you know, so much lobbying for immigration reform. Immigration reform is very important to the hospitality industry here in the culinary capital of the United States.
And I know last year there was a lot of discussion. You weighed in on the minimum wage requirement and the versus the tipped wage. Where are you guys now with that?
We supported the minimum wage at the state level. We supported the minimum wage at the city level. We just wanted to make sure it was a balanced approach, and we kept the tip wage because, remember, by law, you got between tip wage and your tips, you have to make minimum wage. We do not bat operators, so everybody has to make entry-level wage. If not, then they're breaking the law.
Talking with President of Illinois Restaurant Association, Sam Toya. And Sam, there's still that discussion within the industry about front of house versus back of house and how to equally distribute money. Any you want to talk about that at all?
Sure. You know, so the point is the reason why we supported the tip wage is because if the tip wage went away, it could have hurt people in the back of the house, because then it would be imbalanced. So way people, you know, and a lot of way people came out and testified to keep the tip wage. So that's a challenge always to make sure that back of the house and front of the house people work together and that the wages are, you know, pretty equal.
Sam, you get one final plea to tell everyone to go and participate in Chicago Restaurant Week.
Please come try some of the great restaurants here in the culinary capital of the United States, Chicago. This is the 13th annual dining event sponsored by Choose Chicago. It's all about guests in beds and hotels and diners in seats at restaurants. So please go visit some of our great restaurants in some of our 77 neighborhoods here in the city of Chicago.
Thank you to Sam Toya. He's the president of the Illinois Restaurant Association. Sam, we always love your energy. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.